Hey, everybody, and welcome back into the Entrepreneur Podcast with Thomas Cox. And we are picking up right where we left off last week with our interview with Mark Pettis, who is the president of Highlands College. And we got to talk to him last week about how he got to be in that position, a little bit about his upbringing in small-town Alabama, his time at UAB with Thomas, and eventually how he met his wife and got to hear about his wonderful family. This week, we get to hear a little bit more about his role specifically at Highlands College, how that all got started, his relationship with Chris Hodges, and even more. So thank you all so much for joining this episode, and we'll get you right into it.
Thank you for joining us on the Entrepreneur Dad Podcast, where we talk to entrepreneurs, high-level executives, and overall just people that are working their butt off to make a great living for themselves. In this, what we do is we examine their journey, their ups, their downs, their transitions, and also how to remain great spouses and loving parents while managing a full daily schedule. Thank you so much, and I hope you get tons of value out of your time with us.
So transitioning to that, so I say we because we were there together. So let's talk about your first experience with Church of the Highlands.
Yeah, it was amazing. I'd been in church really my whole life, but really from 17 through I was 21 when I first walked into Highlands. You know, I'd been around different kinds of churches, but never seen anything like Highlands. We got invited through a Bible study at Birmingham Southern to Church of the Highlands. It was a little over a month old. It was just getting started. Walked in the doors, and it was, you know, what we call at Highlands, we put a word around it, which is life-giving. I didn't know that word then, but that's honestly the best way to describe it. I felt like I came in the doors, and you know, in some of my church experience, you kind of leave a little more solemn, or you kind of feel bad when you leave, or like, man, I got to get things right, or you kind of feel the weight of that word. The complete opposite was true at Highlands. It was like it lifted me. I felt like a new joy and a new energy, still towards maybe correcting things in my life, but had the optimism and the belief that it was possible, that all things are possible. What I love about Highlands is that, you know, even the name, Higher Heights, that there's always something more. The best is yet to come. That John 10:10 life that God promises, you know, abundant life is possible. And we don't, that doesn't have to be a have to. That can be a get to. I get to do this first. I have to do this. Right. I think we felt that. I think the spirit of worship was unique. And, you know, now the songs we were singing then would be considered traditional probably, but they were what people would call contemporary back then, which as a college student, that was, you know, right. The energy of that was attractive.
For sure.
Pastor Chris's teaching, very practical. I'd never seen a handout, you know, practical. Right. And what he says, you know, kind of even as now, I've had the opportunity a few times to communicate on a Sunday. And as he's coaching me in that, you know, our rule here at Highlands is, you got to help people use it on Monday. If they can't use it on Monday, you know, we don't say it. So it's, even if it sounds good or even if it's theologically true, the truth is anything in the Bible can be brought into a practical, a practical connection with people. So have the revelation. That's all in there. But then just go ahead and go the extra step of showing someone, okay, how do you attach this to your life?
Tell me what I need.
And that's what the Bible, and the Bible is very clear. It's a living word. And so living being, it can become part of all of our life. And that's the key.
So in that stage of our life, okay, I remember we went to Birmingham Southern. Betsy Brown, who was one of the first worship leaders at the church, really the first worship leader at the church, invited us. We went over there to Birmingham Southern. But if I'm not correct, where were you working at that time? Were you not working at Union Hill?
Not during the school year, but I was a valet during the school year. I was a valet. But during the summers, I was a janitor at a local Baptist church.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So was there any hesitation after we went to Birmingham Southern? Was there any hesitation of you going to Highlands at all?
Not really hesitation. I definitely had deeper relationships in kind of in the home church kind of situation. And so what I did throughout college during the school year was, Highlands was here in Birmingham, UAB, so was there. But I was still definitely connected and have stayed connected to the people in my home church and some of those amazing people. Yeah. I wouldn't be here without them. So, but I think there was a transition time for me. And it really wasn't about theology or denomination or even style of worship. It was more relationships. You know, I had deeper relationships. And as Jill and I grew and as we all grew and those relationships transferred here to people like Pastor Lane here on staff and Pastor Steve and Kellen Coldiron, John Larson, some of those guys that, you know, just over time, authentic relationships developed. And, you know, as you grow, seasons change.
Right.
And then we ended up, of course, serving here at Highlands on the Dream Team for 3 years. I was in through grad school. So, so there was an ebb and flow. And I think that's interesting. You know, when people are on their spiritual journey, there are transitions. And I've really only been a part of three churches in my entire life.
I guess so.
But at the same time, when you look back at each of those, I probably would have thought I'd been at each of those forever. And then God just shifts you, and I honor my past because I wouldn't be here without it. And right. I have, still have those great relationships. But I think with church, you know when you know. And for us, it was even early on. It was like, man, this is going to be our home. It just felt like this was a place for us to.
Well, I think that one of the things that Chris does a great job at is he teaches you what the Bible says. We go back as we study the Word. We take it, and then he also says, hey, this is how we need to go apply it. And as being an education, like both of us were raised, that's a big deal.
Yeah.
Is teaching us how to, because, I mean, playing sports, you would watch film and then say, okay, this is what we're going to do. We'd go apply it on the field. And so I think it's very, very, and I know it's
absolutely.
A sports analogy, but it's true.
No, absolutely.
So, been in the church a long time, give me your not on camera, not Sunday school answer of Chris Hodges. Because he is an amazing guy, but give us your back of the house, behind the curtain view of Chris Hodges.
Yeah. You know, truth is, God, the way God has wired him, honestly, in whatever field he was in, he would be as successful as he is as a pastor. And I think there's a unique anointing, and it's obvious that this is what he's made to do. But I think the way he's wired is what you're asking. You know, I tell people all the time, people ask me that kind of question. I tell them, number one, his authenticity, which I think translates to any business leader, any CEO, anyone who's wanting to build something. And that is, he isn't selling a product. He is the product. And I think if you try to, you know, people can always, now more than ever, I believe, they can always see through the sales pitch. They may buy into it, but there's always a disconnect when I feel like someone's pushing something versus they kind of are living it. And I think for Pastor Chris, what you hear on the stage is what you see off the stage. What I see in the meetings, even when you, because you still have, in any organization, there's intense meetings. I've never seen him one time lose that authenticity. His passion for in our case, you know, the gospel of Jesus Christ and what we're doing is authentic. That's what drives him. There's no need for himself to grow more famous. There's no need. He's missionally driven, and I think that's that authenticity. Something else which is huge is his consistency. And that I would say, as a leadership principle, I've learned from so many things, but if you were to put one on top, it would be that consistency. That
consistency in what?
Yeah, just never. He's led this organization for so long through so many different seasons, and he's kept it on point.
Right.
And him as a leader, he's consistently learning, consistently, leading. From, you know, I've been around environments and definitely heard plenty of stories from friends, from people who are, you know, serving under a leader or around a leadership environment where this leader, this year we're going this way, now we're pivoting and we're going this way, and now we're doing this. And they come in emotionally all over, and if someone's out of favor, they're fired, or if they're this. Now, Pastor Chris is very driven by principle. He's consistent. In that consistency, you get that loyalty to people and to the mission, and he's disciplined in that consistency too, where we're always growing, but we're never we're never changing everything. We're always changing one thing. We're always tweaking it, tinkering with it, growing it, never settled, but at the same time, you know, willing to really study something, look through it. For him, he just has an amazing eye to see the horizon, how to move things towards where we're going. I think those two principles, he's a whole lot of fun. I mean, he's, you know, from Louisiana, people hear that he really is the real deal. I mean, I was at a crawfish bowl with him the other day, and just that culture creates a whole lot of fun. And he's an incredible leader. But probably of all those things, you know, for my life, the thing that I'm so thankful for, at least, I look up to all those different areas, is as a leader, he's an empowerer. He's not a micromanager.
So that was going to be a moment.
So he has clarity of everything. But in that, because he's able to deliver that clarity to the people around him, he doesn't have to micromanage them. He's in front. This is where we're going. Now I'm going to empower you.
Right.
And he's a very hands-off leader.
So I was at the church in the beginning stages, just like you. I want to say, first three or four weeks of this church, we were here, 300 or 400 people at Mount Brook High School. But one of my first memories, and I hope he doesn't mind me telling the story, one of my first memories of Chris is at Mount Brook High School. He would greet you when he came to the door. He did the announcements.
Yeah.
He led worship.
Yeah.
He preached. He was at the door greeting you when you went out. And so from that, and I remember watching him lead worship in the throes of Jesus. I mean, just in the moment, and someone would hit a bad note over there. He would give that look to him. And so to me, that may come off as, and you hit it, you didn't even know I was going to ask this question, as a delegator, why is he so good at that? Because you can't, because this is an organization, this is a church, this is a body of Christ, but this is a huge organization.
Well, I think what you saw in that look is he's a musician. And I think in that look, you know, the clarity I mentioned earlier is exactly that. And it actually uniquely so, because he's worked in so many different areas of the church as a worship leader, pastor, youth pastor. He's had touch. He actually understands, and with the value of excellence, understands what those environments can look like. It's not a should look like, can look like. It's the potential of what we can do that he's pushing us towards. And so I think that's actually a perfect picture of that, is that he brings that clarity. And if it's off clarity, he's the first one to say, hey, guys, this is where we're missing it. The discipline is, I'm not going to do it there. And even the early days, him doing all those things, he was setting the standard. And as you've seen him grow through that, so that now we had clarity of what it should look like, and he's empowering people around him. And honestly, that's the only way he grows, but that's the only way we all grow. And if he's not growing and we're not growing, then the organization can't grow, the congregation can't grow. And so even through all the way through the dream team, think about this, the ultimate empowerment is that he's literally given away the ministry of the church to the saints, which is actually what Ephesians 4 teaches. And I think that's a great principle for any business, is that you can dump on people, and that's not healthy. And even delegation is somewhat like I think about it like a babysitter. Like when I delegate my kids, that I'm leaving a pretty set list of instructions, and you have to follow these instructions. Right. That's different than empowering. Empowering is, here's the vision, here's the culture, but you got a big field. I'm going to let you lead in your own style. It's like the math problem. You don't have to solve the exact same way, as long as you get to the right answer. That's the teacher you want, right? That says, I'm just looking for the answer. That's what he's looking for. I'm not going to tell you I'm not going to micromanage how you get there, because that's why I've hired you. If I had to do that, then I'm just delegating or dumping.
Right.
But empowering is the ultimate threshold. And I think you go through seasons of that, and obviously that's something that now he's doing to us, and we're doing to our teams, and overall we're doing to our congregation. But that's the spirit of it. And everyone, the bottom line is, everyone grows.
Right.
And I think people are attracted to that. They want a leader who's big enough in their own security to allow people around them to grow to their full potential.
Right.
And he's thrives on that versus being intimidated by that.
So let's talk about Church of the Highlands as a company, not as a church. I know it's hard to distinguish that, but does your CEO, Chris Hodge, is he in a constant mode of tweaking things to make them better? Is it a conversation? Is it a conversation that you guys are always having? Because there's a group of probably six or eight of you guys that he's in constant contact with. Is there a constant thought of how can we make this better from the simple things that we do on a weekly basis?
Yeah, everything. No, everything. But everything is constantly being looked at. But like I mentioned earlier, with consistency, the question we ask each year is, this is a great question for any leader. There's a lot of things we can do, and there are incremental changes we're always making in everything. Every environment, every Sunday, there should be something we debrief every service, every moment.
Like, so you do?
Oh, absolutely.
So multiple services a week, you debrief every service.
Every service is being debriefed, yeah.
That's awesome.
And tweaked. I mean, at Highlands, we have three morning services where he preaches live, and I meet when I'm in at the campus where he's communicating. We meet together with a small group, and that's his first question, is what do we need to do better? He's changing things and getting better all morning.
That's right.
But the cool thing is, the organization is again, that could be very scattered, and there is intentionality there at every level. But the question we ask every year, we do it in December heading into the next year, is if, as an organization, it's a great question, what is the one thing that if we got better in it, it would affect everything? And so we center the entire organization, all, now over 500 staff around, everyone's department, incremental changes, growth, absolutely, but together, brainstorming, energy, focus on this one thing. We'll spend an entire year focusing on a project so that there are the critical mass or critical momentum that we would need to affect things in a large way. So I think that honestly, that allows people, no matter what their job title is, to be a part of that thing. So for us, there's something we do called the growth track.
Yeah,
A couple years ago, that was the one thing. If we did this one thing better, more people would find their gifts, more people would call their calling. We spent an entire year rewriting it, refilming it, rebranding it, re-messaging it, to freshen it up, to get people.
It's the basis of getting people involved in your church.
Yeah.
And that's the huge big thing with the church this size, is, oh, it's too big. No, it's not that big.
Yeah.
It's really not. Because what happens is, you have your small group that's a church inside the church.
Yep.
That's, if something happens or somebody's sick, they're the one bringing you food or loving on you or whatever.
Yep.
So, all right, five questions. These are just super practical questions. Give me the honest answers. What does your morning routine look like in the morning?
Yeah, so something I'm always working on, and actually spend a lot of time with, even with you, we've talked in the last few months. So for me right now, 5 a.m., wake up. I'm going to be up and hopefully exercising, which I love to run primarily, and then trying to get more disciplined with weights.
Yeah, Thank you.
But yeah, so 5:15, hopefully running. Back in the house is around 6. I'm going to spend my devotional time from 6 to 6:45, 6:50, in that range. A little margin between our four boys get up around 7. And then I have a full hour of dad time to help, you know, get them ready. But honestly, it's a quality time for me to see them, pray with them. And then as often as possible, which is most every day, I want to be the person that takes them to school.
Right.
And then drop them off. And then one of the cool things I've started lately, just, and we've talked a lot about, just maximizing learning moments. So on the way in, I'm going to podcast something.
For sure.
You know, to work, and then work day, of course. And then even on the way home, generally I podcast a sermon on the way home.
Right.
So kind of maximizing those learning moments.
A lot of people look up to you from a spiritual standpoint. You're on stage at one of the largest churches in the country. You're 45 minutes, your devotional time, whatever. What does that look like for you?
So right now I'm doing, I'm reading, of course, I like a paper Bible devotionally.
Me too.
I don't want my phone out. So I'll have, scriptures. I have a book I'm always reading, which I'm reading a book right now. It's the Easter season on the cross. And then journal. And I think the way I'm wired, I'm not a guy who does that regimen exactly the same every day. In fact, this morning when I got up, the last few days, because I think it's Easter week, I've been reading this book on the cross and then leading into scripture. Today, I just spent time reading through the Gospels, every account of crucifixion. It's Good Friday.
Right.
And then ended up journaling and didn't even touch the book. But today, ran out of time, and it was a great time. So that journaling is where prayer happens for me. I'm actually a writing prayer, especially praying for people in my life. I have a list, but then my journaling is actually me just writing out my prayer. I write out my prayer in the morning. It's just a way for me to stay. It's a little more tangible focus for me.
Focus is the thing for me, because I'll be thinking, Lord Jesus, thank you for this day. Oh gosh, I got to go get so-and-so at the grocery store.
And that's part of that's what writing does. Yeah. In fact, it's probably the only thing I write with a pen anymore.
Yeah,
I don't type in everything else. It demands focused.
Right.
To actually.
So you, along with, working in the Church of Highlands, you've got in my opinion, a CEO type role with Highlands College. What does a day of eating look like? Because you are viewed as the CEO type. And one of the things I hear from the CEO type is their schedule and all this stuff. Give me some thoughts on eating. Because I know it's something we've talked about privately, but what does that look like for you? And what are your goals there on a daily regimen of eating?
Yeah, so I'm not Thomas Cox. So side note there. I think because I've was a youth pastor for so many years, I had developed a really incredibly fun habit. At 38, you just can't do anymore, which is late night eating. It's actually, I've kind of always been pretty healthy during the day. Like, it's easy for me to make healthy choices. I just like that fourth meal, about 8 o'clock. So that's the thing I'm working on the most right now. So I don't think I'm by any means an example in this, other than I'm unwilling to let it stay in a bad place. So currently I'm working through just a cut season. I don't know if it's going to work out or not. Free summer, but no. I think the main thing for me is that it's getting fueled. Honestly, a lot of times during the day, the negative thing I think even drives that late night eating is the fact that I'll work through a lunch.
Yes.
Pushing it where you're kind of in the adrenaline or you're in the flow, then you end up, at 5 or 6 o'clock at night, and you're eating. So I think that's what I'm working on the most, is being very disciplined to have breakfast, snack, lunch, snack, and then an early dinner, and then be done with it, which is so hard.
So hard. So,
but you told me I can eat an apple and peanut butter late night.
Eat it, yep.
If I need to. So.
What's your, not counting the Bible, okay, what's your favorite book of all time?
That's a hard question. I'll give you a few.
Okay.
Mere Christianity, C.S. Lewis, read it in college. Massive for me. Pursuit of God, A.W. Tozer.
Yep.
Massive for me. I think Prisoner in the Third Cell, it's a book by Gene Edwards, mm-hmm. is another one. And Tale of Three Kings, actually, both those are incredible books.
Yeah.
For me, I'm a history guy, so there's so many different history books that I enjoy reading in. I try to read. I read every single day. So it's hard to even have a top 10 list because there's so many books that have fed my life, for sure. And I think the key is reading. And I think nowadays, beyond just physical books, or books digitally, is just there's so much through the blog world and even podcast world, listening, of course, but just absorbing information that's out there. And so There's never been a time in history, of course, where we had such access. And so I think as leaders, we need to maximize that and take advantage of that.
What are you reading right now?
The book I'm reading on the cross is called Strange Kingdom. It's a book by a guy named Ken Costa, who's a banker from London who just had an amazing... He's actually from South Africa and lives in London now. Had a massive God moment in college. And now he's in his 70s. And interesting combination there is the businessman.
Right.
He's kind of a businessman slash pastor slash... prophet almost in a way. So he's a phenomenal read, and I've really enjoyed that. I've never actually read a book that, you know, is 300 pages just on the cross.
Wow.
That intense. I've read chapters and moments, but I've really enjoyed that intensity, and it's been a whole lot of good. I'm reading a lot of stuff by Patrick Lencioni this year.
Yeah, he came to, what was he at the Maxwell event,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, so we read The Advantage, reread The Advantage. I've read it a few years ago, and actually he has a family book Jill and I read together, on the three questions for a frantic family, that
right.
was a phenomenal book. So I've enjoyed that this year. And podcasting right now, a podcast called How I Built This.
Okay. Who's that by?
Guy Raz is the guy's name. It's NPR podcast.
Oh, okay.
It's on entrepreneurs and how they built their businesses. I was listening the other day to one on the Away travel company. It's a new travel company. And just how literally these two girls, you know, formed this, now sold over 1 million suitcases around the world. This new product that came out of nowhere 3 years ago because they had the vision for it. They got some capital for it, and then they developed an incredible marketing plan online and just got the word out. Yeah.
What's it called?
Away.
Oh, wow.
Away.
Okay. So
yeah.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Last question. If you could go back to your 20-year-old self and sit the 20-year-old Mark Pettis down, what would you tell him?
Just enjoy the ride, man. I'm not a regret guy.
Yeah, me either.
If someone said, what would you change? Nothing. I mean, but there's been a lot of things that have obviously not been great experiences or negative or things I've done wrong. But at the same time, man, I think life is meant to be lived. And I would tell myself to stay true to I think at 20 years old, I had dreams and hopes. And now I haven't seen all those come true, but I've seen enough of them come true.
Right.
So I would just encourage myself with what a lot of those guys that we knew at that age encouragement, which is God is true. What he says is true. God has a plan and purpose. His power is real. Trust that process. Have fun and enjoy life. And don't eat as much late at night.
Thank y'all so much for listening to this episode of the Entrepreneur Dad Podcast with Thomas Cox. We hope you enjoyed our interview with Mark. We certainly did. Next week, we have one of our favorite people on the show, BJ Ellis, formerly the CEO of Yellowhammer News, now one of the higher ups over at Telegraph Creative. Getting to hear his story was absolutely incredible, from his days as a college basketball player, then college basketball coach, all the way up until his journey into the private sector, his family, his friends, all of that. Wonderful episode coming up next week. Now, if you liked what you heard so far, please give us a rating on Apple, give us a review, just so that other people can find out how terrific our show is. Thank you guys so much, and we'll see you next week.